we're back for an all-new Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. Ooh, Ira, your voice today. Getting into the velvety depths.
I'm sick.
Okay.
I got the Delta variant.
Oh, I see. Which, by the way, my new thing is that drag queens should change their name every couple months with a new pun. Mm-hmm. Not that drag queens are often named after puns anymore, but Delta variant for 2 months is the perfect drag queen name. Somebody.
Has been available an option.
Yeah.
Louis, step up to the plate, bitch.
I know, you're right. But yeah.
What?
Physician, heal thyself. Yeah.
Hello. My name is Aida Osman. I still have an internal migraine from Pride weekend, so let's just be careful.
Yeah, I think I'm sick from Pride weekend or something. I don't know. I'm just glad I don't have the JetBlue variant.
Yeah, the Southwest.
Ugh. The Spirit variant, you know.
God forbid.
I'm still collecting sky miles while I have a sore throat.
The Frontier variant.
Yeah, the United.
Spirit Airlines jokes actually always funny to me. Like, I'm not over it yet. If you make a joke about crashing into the ocean on a Spirit Airlines flight, I laugh.
It's an airline that will kill you.
I don't care how much they pay us, I'm flying Spirit. And I'm taking my Louis bag on the Spirit flight.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing.
That's what Issa Rae's going to send you around on? Spirit?
Yeah, private. Nobody on the plane, just me.
Are you telling us some things about Issa Rae Presents?
Yeah, Issa, come on, get the bag up, girl. Get the bag up. I want to be United. I want to fly United.
That's one of the interesting things about the WGA that people don't know about is if you work on a show or something and they fly you somewhere, they have to fly you first class.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize why that was, but I realized if they didn't have that rule, they could just send you on any airplane in any seat and basically ruin your life, I guess. So
you know they would.
Ruin your life.
I am very happy to be going back to in-person writing rooms because I want to point out that the pandemic got a lot of people really fucked up with how they like don't do basic tenets of like what a job should be anymore.
Exactly.
This is going to be some WGA complaining. Should have saved it for Keep It. But you know how you get like lunch at work.
Right.
And an endless supply of LaCroix.
When a pandemic happened, absolutely gone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my lunch situation flew off the rails. I was sitting at home.
Yeah.
I was like Templeton and Charlotte's Web, just like piling a table of food into my mouth.
Yeah. Or there'd be like water for you to drink. I feel like that's a thing too with like even not just WGA and writers' rooms, like people who work in offices, right? You know, access to certain like coffee or water things during the day, right? That are... Mm-hmm. The basic sort of comforts that are provided in an office that, you know, once people aren't there anymore, the whole thing of not having people in offices anymore is a way to just not treat your employees like you care about them.
Yeah. And also at this point, I need like an addendum to my vision insurance. Like I need help. I need eye appointments. I've had to be on the screen for what, a year and a half now. Things are fading very quickly for me.
Vision insurance is always the most confusing to me in the world, to be honest, because it's always attached to your health insurance.
Mm-mm.
But I feel like I could never find it.
They didn't give you guys a lunch stipend at all?
No, I didn't get no lunch stipend.
Oh, I forgot to ask.
Maybe I should have worked for a black woman.
See, there we are. I have no contacts or glasses or anything yet, and that's actually kind of terrifying. I know one day my vision will fail me, and I am utterly illiterate when it comes to what to do about your eyes. So just to let you know, there's a lingering fear, even if you don't have vision problems, that you will have vision problems.
You'll be flipping through trivia books unable to read them.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah. No, that'll be like the climactic scene in the like Oscar doc about me. Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch, like going through Trivial Pursuit cards crying.
You'll be blind on Jeopardy.
That was me flattering myself by choosing Benedict Cumberbatch, but anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think there's another option.
Yeah.
Louis, I think that's the one for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. No.
Lucas Hedges, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stomping around New York in them boots.
Oh, yeah. Did we discuss that? He's with Tommy Dorfman, and they were outfitted. I mean, Lucas Hedges' outfit was very coyote, somehow uglier. I mean, there we go.
We gave him too much power.
I adore that boat, but they looked like they were running from the mob and ducked into a wasteland and picked up some used clothes to throw on and hide.
Yeah. I mean, I would say they looked fierce, but also it looked a little haphazard If I were running a fashion blog, it would be a conundrum for me to say both the supportive thing and the critical thing.
Oh, God. I just found the photos.
You see it. You see
it. I prompt everyone who's listening to go look this up right now. Just look up Lucas Hedges boots. Okay, the Margiela, like, tabby shoes just need to stop. I'm tired of seeing them.
I mean, he boots the house down, the apartment complex.
the tenements.
Boots the whole cul-de-sac. Yeah, I don't know.
It's the hairbands on the wrist for me. Oh, that's another one Lewis had. But it's the da-da-da-da-da for me. It's the blank for me. Sorry, Lewis and I were complaining earlier about gay lexicon. Of course, it trickles down from Black culture, but I'm so tired of hearing the same three things amongst all my gay friends. We have no variety.
Also, it is literally three things. Yes. It is every sentence. I mean, like, this entire weekend, which I spent with lovely people in San Francisco, 99% of them now speak in, like, three, like, chatty Cathy phrases for gay people, which are, one, not blank, so everything is not the blank. Not me being gay, not me, not number one.
Not me running into my ex at Starbucks.
Right, that's exactly it. Number two, the way blank. The way I can't stop being gay at Pride. Like, again, it's like, is that a statement even? What are we saying at this point? You're simply speaking.
It's just dependent clauses. That's how, yes, how we communicate. And then, of course, it's the blank for me. It's the gay people at this Pride event for me. Girl, where was we supposed to go? Where else? What do we have?
And by the way, it's infectious. It, like, worms into your brain, too. I don't think I ended up saying it, but God knows, like, I had the, like, dry heave impulse to say them a few times. And I try not to speak in cliches. And by that, I mean, I still do my own other cliches, but I don't have room to adopt any others.
I think also as writers and people who are, you know, familiar with the evolution of language and, like, you know, like, creating different pieces of language with ourselves, those things maybe hit us harder. Because I have used those phrases before, obviously, as a Black person, as a gay person. But there comes a point where you are, like, even if you're texting it out, right? And you're like, why am I still using this?
Yeah, exactly.
It just feels weird. Exactly. It feels the taste of it feels weird in your mouth. So you start using something else. Some people don't get that taste.
Right. They're taking cues from the other people. Yeah.
Upcycle. Yeah. We should start something here.
Yeah, we got to come up. We got to come up with something new.
We deserve a lingo.
Let's do it by the end of this episode.
How about silence? How about everybody just quiet the fuck down?
A gay quietude just needs to lull over the crowd.
Well, this isn't an ASMR podcast, so we're gonna come up with some gay slang before the episode's over.
Drum on this microphone. Yeah. Shut up, everybody.
Also, I don't think I'm sick. I think I just let the heat on in my room, and that's why my throat is dry. Mm. Who can say? Anyway, we're going to talk about Britney this week.
Mm-hmm. Free her.
We're going to talk about the BET Awards.
Free us.
There is no more complex topic in my mind than Queen Latifah. We'll get into it.
Ooh, juicy.
And we will be joined by a real icon, Nico Anan, from P-Valley. And a recent guest hosting gig on Legendary.
In which he's fabulous, so.
Yes. And did not get drawn and quartered on the show like Tiffany Haddish did.
Drawn and quartered, underrated phrase. Thank you for that.
It's up there with card and feathered, so thank you for reminding me.
All right, we'll be right back. Last week, just like Velma Kelly, Britney Spears took the stand. She spoke on her own behalf with more passion than she has ever been able to in her 12 years under her father's legal conservatorship, as she pleaded her case for her independence. And I just want to say, for everybody in Britney Spears' family who is not her current boyfriend, it's on site.
Even Jamie?
Even Jamie Lynn, okay? We go get into her.
Okay.
We go getting the Zoe 101.
Okay.
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 Because Zoe 101 has lost her damn mind. First things first, we've talked about the conservatorship before when we watched the Framing Britney Spears doc. Mm-hmm. A conservatorship is a case where a judge appoints a responsible person or organization to care for another adult who cannot take care of themselves or manage their own finances. And we all remember the era when Britney was put under the conservatorship. You know,
yeah,
which is a long ago era. We're talking, yeah, 2008. Yeah,
yeah,
no less like, than 7 million years ago.
Perez Hilton still had clicks, and when you said his name three times, he didn't appear in a mirror and ask you to pay attention to him.
He hadn't yet apologized to Ellen for being mean or whatever it was. I actually do find Perez Hilton somewhat underrated historically in terms of tabloid culture. That said, he also could be mean. Anyway, moving along.
I think everyone was so shocked to hear the audio of her in court. Mm. I don't know what any of us were expecting. You know, we've seen these Instagram videos that clearly her team makes her record, where she sounds loopy, sounds like her voice is choppy. It seems like she's being held at gunpoint while making these Instagram videos. And she sounded so lucid and like, coherent.
Yeah.
And so I think that was what was most shocking to me. Speaking about wanting her independence, it sounded like a woman who knew exactly what she wanted.
Well, I feel two ways about it. I thought she was sometimes lucid and then sometimes like repeating the same phrase several times. Now, that did not make me discredit anything she said, but it was weird. It was like yet another Instagram video of hers, and that I had like two or three layers of analyses going on of like, is she okay even right now? Mm-hmm. Additionally, she did make her point. Like, mm-hmm. she went through it step by step, and I would say she did herself proud in that. Like, we had, as just onlookers, even casual onlookers, even people who aren't like avidly a part of the Free Britney movement, had lots of questions, and I think she answered most of them. So
definitely, I also think that I'm just now finding out from her testimony that her family had put her on lithium for many, many years, and I wonder if. It doesn't seem like she's medicated at all when she's giving this testimony. It's so lucid. It's so clear. She knows exactly what she's saying. Like you said, Lewis, I think the only times I saw maybe cracks in the armor was when she would bring up like Paris Hilton or Miley Cyrus, or just hearing the kind of like justified resentment she had held for what she'd had to see through all these 13 years of the conservatorship was making me mostly just sad. Not distrusting or questioning, but you could see the moments where the emotionality was coming out. And I'm actually surprised she was that stoic, that able to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after all those years of buildup specifically. But specifically about how it made me feel sad. Like, for instance, this last weekend was Pride weekend. I went in San Francisco and New York.
Tell us again. Remind us. Lewis, we didn't know.
Yes, okay. She was in Dolores Park. Okay.
We did it. You're gay.
When she's sitting in Dolores, she's really sitting in Dolores.
But of course, I ended up hearing a lot of Britney Spears music this weekend. And like, while I'm appreciative of that fact, a part of me also didn't want to listen to her music after all this. It was like it was just too sad in a way. I don't know. It's like, I wanted to celebrate her, but not like that in a way. Because like the music reminded me of the work she had to do. And like and I don't know how much of that she really wanted to do, even though during her testimony, she talked about being a pro and choreographing her tours that she had to do and things. It was just, I was so conflicted about her as a performer at all, having to perform, that hearing her music again felt jarring.
Mm-hmm.
Shameless plug here really quickly, but my episode of Betty came out, and we had written a scene where some of the girls are dancing to Toxic by Britney Spears. And at the time, we was like, oh, Britney, go get that money, you know, in our heads, not being fully aware of the conservatorship. And now watching my episode back and seeing the girls dancing to Toxic, a beautiful moment, wonderful, ethereal, go check it out. But I'm like, damn, that stupid, stupid father of hers got all that money, whatever it is, the little sink money, the little placement money that the Britney estate got. It's just, it's devastating. And that man could full die. I hate her dad so much.
Well, I mean, that's a thing that happens with a lot of music, right? You know, it's like whatever your feelings about, you know, like Dr. Luca Kesha situation, right? You know, you want to be like, I'm not supporting any of his new music that he's making, you know, to make a point. But then it's anytime you listen to like a classic song that wasn't a Max Martin song in like the 2000s pop music. It was usually a Dr. Luke song. So yeah. If you're listening to like Since You've Been Gone, he's still getting his coins.
Which girl we are. So,
you know,
to reevaluate the playlist.
Oh, I will be listening to Since You've Been Gone. I'm listening to it now.
Mouthing. You've been mouthing the lyrics the whole time. I ever stopped.
But that's the thing, you know, it's like you wonder how much money Jamie is making off of this. It's like Blackout, her seminal album, the one the fans keep coming back to and saying it's perfect, even though In the Zone and Femme Fatale made some points. Blackout is the one that specifically, like, there's always the jokes that, like, did she even know what was going on when she was recording this, right? And I'm like, she probably didn't.
Yeah.
And that's technically before the conservatorship when she recorded that album?
Yeah, that was the era that led to the conservatorship.
Got it. Right. Because I know she's recorded three albums technically under the conservatorship, and that is not one of them.
So. Britney Jean is all Jamie's fault. Clearly. Teaming her up with Will.i.am. Come on.
Oh, no, wait, excuse me. Are we talking about Scream and Shout? Because I've already defended that show on this air, and I will do it again.
No, Scream and Shout is good, but because of the success of Scream and Shout, the entire album, Britney Jean, was then produced by Will.i.am, and it is better than you remember, but it is a mess.
Does that have Perfume on it?
It does. Perfume, okay. And Alien.
Perfume, the vocals to me sounded like maybe they were recorded backwards first and then played back forwards. I do kind of like that song.
Also, I think, of course, the whole thing is painful to hear. The whole story is painful. I think hearing Britney talk about the fact that her children were kept from her, she wasn't allowed to remove her IUD, which, what in the Dr. Kevorkian, what in the Frankenstein's monster, like, that's medieval Victorian practices. It's just evil. It's so evil. And
did she not tack that onto the end of her testimony too? That
throwaway.
It was like this third act, what? Like, really unbelievable.
Well, the thing about you even mentioning like, Miley or Paris, and then like me even talking about Will.i.am, right, producing an album with her.
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting about this is at a certain point within the conservatorship, once Britney sort of moved to like the Vegas show, it sort of became a given that she was just sort of like, oh, she's spending time with her family. Like she's like, she just is out of the like regular being a celebrity life, you know? And now you sort of get that wasn't really of her own accord and
prerogative.
Know.
Carry on.
And you get that from people like Christina Aguilera making a statement about, you know, how she supports Britney and about how like no woman should ever have her independence or rights taken away from her like this. And it's so many of Britney's contemporaries, people she probably was friends with prior to this, have had no contact with her for like over a decade.
Yeah.
At least. You know, she's had no contact with other people who know what she's going through. When she was even talking about how she can't even have contact with the friends she's made in AA, it reminds you that like this woman has no contact with anyone in the outside world. Like she's fucking Princess Peach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a miracle that she's able to, like, with the clips we've seen of her mothering her children and doing an amazing job at it. Like, it's a miracle. She's such a strong person to be able to have the wherewithal to like keep going on.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I say fuck Jamie Lynn.
Yeah, speak on it.
Because she given a little statement being like, I don't want to be accused of anything. You know, like this conservatorship, you know, has like nothing to do with me, doesn't affect me. You know, I don't care. Britney, you know, like wants to run out to the jungle or something, have like 1,000 kids. I'm like, you sound flip about a situation that has paid you.
Yeah, I didn't get the tone. Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Nobody is living off of Zoe 101 checks, okay?
Yeah, but you know what? We have to consider that if Britney's gone through that level of abuse, I can't even imagine what the younger sister has gone through as well. Maybe it's a quieter abuse. But for the first headline article I read to be like, Jamie Lynn speaks out about the conservatorship and she says, not that I owe the public anything. Like, to preface it with that, I know something is wrong. Like, you are not of the right mental, you're not there. You're not fully there. So,
yeah. I mean, listen, I would love, you know, Zoe to enroll into Zoe 201, find out what's really going on.
Don't let Miranda Cosgrove hear you talking like this, okay? Because this is what she, you know, not taking her whole steez.
Listen, I would never go against my queen, Miss Cosgrove, because the new iCarly is actually it. It's very funny. Lacey Mosley is hilarious on it, as usual. Also, I've been a Miranda Cosgrove, like, low-key, like,
okay,
stand for a minute. She's got some bops.
Sparks Fly? Yes, they do.
Yes, Sparks Fly. Also, Face of Love, this song that she made off this, like, EP that Dancing Crazy was initially on, like, is not on Spotify, but it's on Apple Music. It's it. And she made the song Sayonara with Greg Kurstin from The Burden to Be, one of my favorite fucking music producers. He's worked with Kelly Clarkson, Pink, everybody. He's the one who did mostly all of Nick Jonas's Spaceman album, which is why it's so good. So,
oh, cult classic, yeah.
Isn't it crazy that Nick Jonas will one day pass away and he'll be at the gates of heaven and somebody will almost welcome him in and then they will say, oh, wait, it says here you rhymed jealous with hellish. Straight to the underworld. Straight to the underworld, bitch.
Wow. First of all, fix it by doing a cover of the whole song with a full black gospel choir, okay? That's where he rectified. That's where he fixed it. That's repenting, Lewis.
I want him being escorted out of heaven as Tinashe is going into heaven. And she's right. Like, Nick J? And he's like, Tinashe?
As Lil Nas X ascends. Yes, right.
Yeah. And Priyanka gives him an insulin shot.
Oh, wait, but wait. If we're talking about guiding lights in terms of conscience and reason, we must turn to Justin Timberlake, who...
Sanctify him, Lewis. Yes.
He went on a long tweet spree in the way that Christina Aguilera did. Also, obviously, all three of these people are former Mickey Mouse Club members. And he said... things he should say, like, no woman should ever be restricted from making decisions about her own body. But he also started his post by saying, regardless of our past, good and bad, girl, who cares about your past? Stop bringing you up.
That is why I did not care for his initial apology to Britney and Janet. And here, in his statement of support for Britney, he still has to be like, you know, please don't drag me for the stuff I did. Like, bitch, just shut up.
Also, is he bringing up that she cheated on him? Like, who cares? Not Jermaine. Stop talking about that.
Also, I don't believe he believes a woman should do whatever she wants with her body, because otherwise he wouldn't have the song Rock Your Body.
Exactly.
You mean the song that I famously believe ended with, I'm going to dip your naked body into this sauce when it's, I'm going to have you naked by the end of this song. Guys, what is wrong with me?
Oh my God.
Baby, clean your ears. Gonna dip you naked into this sauce.
Not you saying Jermaine and me going, what did Dupree say about this?
Right? did you hear like a version of the song for BW3s or something? Yeah. Which, by the way, I've realized some people don't know that Buffalo Wild Wings is,
yes.
BW3s. They don't call it that some places.
We just call it B-dubs.
Mm. That and Buffalo Wild Wings. Though if I say B-dubs, you shouldn't hear those words coming out of my mouth is all I'm saying. Something's wrong.
Put it on your headstone.
That's what I used to call Brian Wilson.
Oh, that's
B-dubs, when we used to hang out.
Oh, you know.
And I always think, wouldn't it be nice?
You know what? Most importantly, what did K-Fed say?
K-Fed... I don't know, girl.
The most important opinion on this whole thing.
The singer of Popo's Out.
I am ashamed to admit, I was trying to just think of that word just now, and I did not have it. Thank you for having Papa's Out right on the tip of your tongue.
That song was a bop.
I don't know about that. Did I say that?
Okay, first of all, listen. I mean, you're not going to get Popo's Out the first time you hear it, okay? I mean, it's not like anything you've ever heard before.
It has to grow on you.
Oh, girl, it's like Finnegan's Wake, bitch. I better read it a second time.
The second and third time, you know, you're going to be
for
like,
comprehension.
Whoa, what is this? This is great.
My mic has fully fallen over. Like I'm. You just sent me into a state I should not have been in. Okay.
I think I've admitted on this podcast before that I've seen Kevin Federline live.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you loved it. You pre-ordered tickets.
During the Popo's Out era, he did a concert at the House of Blues in Chicago.
There was a while where any white man with a fitted hat and a long shirt could not escape the Kevin Federline comparison at all.
Bubba Sparks still running from it. Yeah.
He's not running from nothing. Have you seen Bubba Sparks?
I wish Donnie Klang had avoided those comparisons because he was good. Do you remember Donnie?
Wait, who?
Donnie Klang. He was the white singer on the Making the Band where he Diddy created the boy group, oh. Day 26.
No, I don't remember that, but naturally you do. Thank you for that.
Yes, I still listen to his album, okay? He did what needed to be done.
I don't understand Diddy. What is Day 26? Not even an equinox day. What is the thing? What? Why?
I don't know. Day 26 was the people in making the band four after Danny Duquesne was made. And they only got one album, so... Maybe they got two.
But I sing Showstopper every day. So,
of course,
prominence was achieved.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we wrap up this Britney situation? Of course, now the next step is it feels like this is going to progress in some sort of ugly way where we're going to be hearing from the other side about her. And I'm like bracing for that in a way. But
no, I'll tell you how it's going to end, Lewis. Mm. I've already bought my ticket with a few other freedom fighters.
Okay.
And we will be storming the mansion.
Oh. Got it.
I wasn't going to storm the Capitol. I feel like there's two types of Americans. The Americans who would storm the Capitol and the Americans who would storm Britney Spears' mansion.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe there's some overlap.
It's you and Britney against the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Against her father.
Right.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Never mind. Let me not say this because Ira, your name is literally Ira the Third. But I was about to say, I don't trust anyone who names their child their name.
Well, but to daughters, be fair,
but daughters, there's something creepy about it.
I don't trust my mother. She's a Scorpio.
Oh,
yeah, she's a demon. I'm kidding. I love her.
This is where Ira admits he's been in conservatorship for the past 13 years.
I've been in my own conservatorship. I am my own conservator.
Pulitzer Prize winning play. I am my own conservator. Yes.
So the way you're giving Sylvia Plath, giving, that's another one. That's the fourth one I'm adding to this.
Oh,
girl,
it's yes.
Giving. Giving girl. Sylvia Plath.
The girl saw Legendary once, and now all the time they're like, it's giving.
It's not giving what it's supposed to give, okay?
It's giving going to the store. You could just say, oh, you went to the store.
Right. If you can just replace the beginning of the sentence with I, do it.
All right. Well, we're back. Nico Anon joins us. Our guest today is an actor, dancer, and choreographer, triple threat. You may know him as Uncle Clifford on Stars as P-Valley, and he is also a guest judge on season 2 of Legendary on HBO Max. Please welcome Nico Anon.
Okay.
Hello.
What's going on?
We have to start with Legendary because I enjoy watching it. And if I were tasked with just joining the panel and like having to be authoritative in that situation, I would be incredibly intimidated. Was that like altogether a fun experience, or did you go in like nervous at all?
I mean, it was altogether fun, for real, because I love the show. You know, I'm here for the culture, and I've been in quarantine for over a year, and I ain't hit a ball in a long ass time. So so that was its own experience. And in terms of, like, I guess being intimidated by the show, there was so much that I didn't know what to expect because, you know, there was a different producing team from season 2 than it was from the first season. You know, first season they had filmed over, you know, on the East Coast, and second season they had moved to the West Coast. There was no audience. So it was really kind of different. But I'm going to tell you, though, the judges really, like, welcomed me, you know. Laomi and I have become very good friends, you know. Megan and I, we do it together and do our thing. You know, she actually had me in her, and myself and Brandy from P-Valley in her music video for Movie. Mm. So, like, it's been a lot of, like, lasting relationships that have come from Legendary. So I'm with it. You know, I'm so with it. But it was a lot of fun. It was really cool to just see the creativity, and I feel like the financial backing, mm-hmm. you know, we could say producing, you know, that is behind like all the different houses and their ideas that they had for the different balls. So that was really cool. You know, so who doesn't like having resources, you know?
Yeah.
I would say we had Leomi on this show, and okay. talk about mm-hmm. somebody you definitely want a lasting relationship with. I mean, she was like dynamite immediately, so I'm very jealous of you.
Yeah. And she's a good cook, too. You know, she had okay. me over. Yo, she had me over to the house.
What'd she make?
She made some barbecue chicken. She threw it on the grill. Her and her man, you know, had us over, you know, for the grill and had some good old potato salad. We had some plantain and banana pudding. It was a big concoction of all the things that you don't want to really have to have, you know, when you're watching your waist. But it was a yeah, but it was a great dinner and that turned into a late night recap and, you know, and the cocktails and things. So, you know, we had a good time.
Well, so on the panel, you seemed very comfortable just like being yourself. I mean, you always seem larger than life in anything you do. But really on this panel, it was truly like you stepped in and it was like, it was your show. I was like, so what is your history in going to balls?
You know what? I am not actually a big ball goer. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was on a live last week with Trace Lissette. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and Leomi came on there too, because it was all about, for me, like Esquelita. Back in the day, back in New York, you know, I
remember Esquelita.
You was at Esco's?
Yeah, I lived in New York. I moved there in 2007. Esco was still there.
Okay, cool. It was a big old... mess and just everything. It was all the things for the good drinks and the good shows, the drag shows and it was all of that. But my history mainly and my comfortability kind of came from, I guess, like the dance world and mm-hmm. being able to, you know, really give critiques and seeing themes and lines, you know. I guess my work as a choreographer kind of it seasoned the, you know, the tone of it for me mm-hmm. more so than actually going to the balls.
Okay.
Did you find the teams receptive to your criticism? Did you end up fearing any of the teams based on their reactions?
No. Everyone in all the houses were actually really cool. It was actually kind of great to have the interaction that we had. I think also everybody was just so hungry because of the quarantine and the distance, you know. So I felt like people, even like other shows that I had done in the quarantine, it was like you have this mask on and you have a shield on top of that, but you could still feel people like pushing past that to actually kind of connect with another human, especially someone that was not in their household, you know, or someone mm-hmm. that they were around, you know. So everyone's very receptive to the vibes and it was a good time.
I love that. And I want to get now to P-Valley, because we have had Katori on the show as well. I adore Katori.
Yeah.
I'm friends with Ian, who works on the show with
cool.
her. Yeah. And so, it's been truly one of the best shows that I've seen in the past few years, let alone one of the best shows to come out of quarantine.
Okay.
And I just want to ask you about your relationship with Katori going from, I know you were in the stage show playing the same character, mm-hmm. and then you moved to the television show. So mm-hmm. what was that like? Did you re-auditioned?
I did, you know. Katori had me go through the fire. But, you know, I didn't think that was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, with a show like P-Valley and a show that kind of like really highlights marginalized communities, it could go really well or it could go really left, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that the audition process for me, it was more so how I felt. And like, she never told me this, but how I felt was, mm-hmm. let me have this opportunity to show people this is Uncle Clifford. A lot of times I feel like, especially in the LGBTQ+ community, there are certain limitations and ideas on, oh, this is what quote-unquote gay is. This is what lesbianism looks like. This is what a bisexual person, how they would act or dress. And something that even actually, a sidebar, when I was on Snowfall, mm-hmm. John Singleton had said to me, he said, you know, Nico, when I was looking for this role, to cast this role, he said, I was looking for a light skin, and in his terms, he said, a pretty Ricky brother, you know, meaning, you know, like a light skin, a little twink, you know, in the culture, we call them a twink, you know, someone 5'8" and, you know, under. And he said, when I walked in the room, he was like, oh, you look like you could beat my ass. You know, you look like you the real deal, you know. And I actually appreciated that because he saw some truth, you know. And I felt like the same thing also with P-Valley. Because originally, Real Talk, the artistic director, when we did the stage play, mm-hmm. he told me at the end of the run, he was like, you know, I really didn't see someone who looked like you as Uncle Clifford, you know? And so I really just really felt that it was a great opportunity. One, I wanted to exercise the acting chops, you know, and let's like, okay, let's transfer from the stage to the screen. And how is that going to be and feel as an actor? So it was a rehearsal for me. That's how I look at auditions anyway. It's my time to just show you how I work. Mm-hmm. You know, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. You know, some people feeling like they want some beef. Some people feel like they want a little pescatarian life going on today. So it's just however you feeling, you know. So it was a great time. We had a good time in the audition room and they threw all the balls at me and was like, well, try this. And well, what about this? And who do you think this is? So it was that.
Something I love about what you said about playing Uncle Clifford is that the word you used was limitless. And my question about that is, mm-hmm. are there things you've gotten to do that you're surprised you've gotten to do or directions you've gotten to take that, you know, weren't what you expected?
That's a great question. I love that because no one has actually made this come to my mind in all this time. So you're good. You're very good. You're
well,
very good.
Stone pros over here. Yeah. Real detectives. Yeah.
I'll tell you, before we started shooting season one, I was in Katori's office and we were going over some tone things. You know, you have like tone meetings with your showrunner, like this is where we're going, this is what we're thinking about. And I was talking about the check cashing scene when Uncle Clifford goes to the check cashing. And we were talking about the look. I was expressing what I thought in my head was going to be the look. And she said, no. She was like, no, you just would wear your hair like Nico, like wear your regular hair, you know, but Uncle Clifford style. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh? Because it was a moment that opened my eyes to, oh my gosh, I'm really going to be able to be a real person. Mm-hmm. That I wasn't going to have to wear a wig all of the time. That we were really going to see Uncle Clifford on so many levels. And I literally was crying and on her couch. And she was like, what's wrong with you? And because in my head, I guess, especially as a gay man and an artist, as much as I can be bold and audacious, mm-hmm. you still feel the restrictions. You still feel the chains that can be put on you. So when she said that, I was just like, oh my God, I don't have to wait till season three, you know, and you see Uncle Clifford, like, you know, without a wig, because I had not read all of the scripts. Mm-hmm. She held all of those things from us. It was literally, you had one script at a time, mm-hmm. you know. Wow. So being exposed to that whole world, it really, like, I was like, oh, snap, this could be anything. Okay, let's go. So,
Your Viola Davis taking off the wig in the mirror scene. You got that. I love that because I think that, like, truly when you think about even representations of, you know, like Black queer people on camera, I think back to the movie that I always used to watch with my family, which was To Wong Fu, right?
Okay.
You know, and I think even in that era, there was that limit of what even drag queens could do, whether or not, like, you look mm-hmm. back at it now, you're like, are these drag queens? Are these trans women? Because, like, they're in the costumes, the wigs, the entire movie, mm-hmm. you know? And you watch it now and you think, like, there's so many different ways that would be told now because they wouldn't have to be dressed up like that mm-hmm. constantly because mm-hmm. drag queens don't do that all the time, you know?
Exactly.
Like, trans, it would make sense, but, you know, it's been a wonder to see representations of that sort of change and from the straight people making those films.
Yeah.
Like you said, like John Singleton, people realizing stuff like that.
The time that we're in really is allowing not only for the members of the community to shine, but the advocates mm-hmm. for the community to really also shine and open doors, create space for others, you know, whether that's the writers, other directors, you know, we've had trans women that have directed episodes, you know, that are in the writer's room, people from all different walks and experiences. Yes, come on, the sun is beaming in all of a sudden. Yes, our ancestors are here.
Yeah, God agrees spirits. With you.
Yes. Yeah, so... It's been an awesome time. I think it's a sign of the time that we're in. You mentioned Tu Wong Fu, and I was sitting here listening with bated breath because I thought you were going to be like me, because my movie that I used to sit around and watch was Mannequin.
Kim Cattrall.
With Hollywood. Yeah.
With
okay.
Kim Cattrall, yes. And Meshach Taylor.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And to be able to see someone who was so larger than life and flamboyant. And even when in playing Uncle Clifford, I always just thought about, like, what happens when she goes home? What happens, you know, like, when you do take the wig off or and you still have these nails? It was just so, the thought process for me was so, it was deep. It was deep. It kind of took me to places. But I'm going to tell you, I would not have been able to go there had it not been for all of the experiences that I had from even doing the play. Mm-hmm. When we were doing the play, the director said to me one day, was like, her name was Nataki Garrett. And she said, okay, Nico, we're going to have you go today. We leave rehearsal and you go to get your nails done. And I was like, for what? And they were like, for the role, you know, and they were really going to put the acrylic nails on me. I was going to go get my nails done and have acrylic tips and everything like that. Now, on stage, it's one thing, but for me, we were in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I had never lived in Minnesota before. You know, we're doing regional theater next to the Guthrie Theater, but I don't live here. I have to get on the subway. I have to walk in these neighborhoods. They don't know me. For me, mm-hmm. they were thinking about the show. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about my life. I was thinking about who I was going to have to fight, how many times I was going to have to argue, who, what, and when I was going to have to hide my hands just getting on the subway. And that right there took me to what Uncle Clifford really lives on a daily basis. Mm. That took me to what non-binary people, in however they care to express the things that could go on in their minds. So that gave me an extra layer of sauce and meat to me. That has been in the performance as well. So I'm grateful.
It definitely shows, by the way. So congrats to you on carrying that with you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and now you got me thinking about a Mannequin remake. You know, like give you the Meshach character. Who's playing the Kim Cattrall role though? Who do you want to be opposite?
Why did Anika Noni Rose just come to my mind?
I mean, why wouldn't
be
she?
Iconic.
Why wouldn't she come to mind? No.
She really just came to my mind. Anika and Nico, let's go, baby.
Right on the marquee. Yeah. Mm-mm, mm-mm. By the way, I think we're due for a Meshach Taylor reappraisal, just period. I don't know if I've heard the definitive queer telling of what designing women has meant, just period. You know, we need
come
that.
Come on.
Too.
Yeah. Yes. Ooh, that was a good Southern Belle drama too. Mm-hmm.
And all this Jean Smart come up we're having, we got to have another designing woman look back.
Have y'all seen her on a Mayor of Easttown?
Yes.
Oh, I'm a human being with a beating heart, aren't I?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
She is so good. So good. I love her. She's like delicious. She's like lemon meringue pie. She is.
No, we had her on here a bit ago, and I'm mad it was before Mare. It was before Hacks. She dropped all this content this summer. She's in everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad. I want to get there one day, baby. One day soon.
Yeah, I mean, and we're ready for season two. When do y'all start shooting?
Who says that we haven't? You see the chops are here.
Oh, that's true.
Yes, yes. Clifford is in the building, you know?
We should have maybe started this out by saying that Nico is serving, by the way, in this look
they know.
He's got
they
going
know.
On here. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I got to kind of represent for the chocolate and for the thickness. You know, I got to keep it. You know, they like it thick. But yeah, we're in the middle of filming right now.
Okay.
It's going to be a while till it gets to the people, but mm-hmm. I'm telling you, the writers, Katori Hall and the writers are really taking us on a whole other kind of freaking journey. And I'm like, oh, We go in here. Okay.
So were people with Katori when she found out she got the Pulitzer again?
Were people with her? I think her kid, she was home. And okay. She was right. I think she was like working on like episode 7 or 8 or mm-hmm. something like that. And she said she just started running around the rooms. I went and I was hanging out one day with her two sons. And they were like, Nico, mommy was running around screaming. She got some prize from school, like in work. And I was like, oh, you mean the Pulitzer? And they were like, yeah. She was running around. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And Tare, he reenacted it for me. And it was a lot. So. It's great, man. You know, I really could not ask for a better boss. When the pandemic started, I was just doing her play, Hot Wing King. Which that she won for.
Right.
Yes. I mean, yeah. I didn't even bring that up. You know, I saw Hot Wing King.
Come on.
Which was it. It was it. I fucking love that show so much.
Thank you.
I'm glad it got this because I felt like it was cut short with the pandemic.
It was. We literally thought like, okay, 2 weeks, we'll be cool and we'll go back, you know. And they were like, no, okay, guys, you guys are shut down. Come get your stuff from the dressing rooms before they close the building, you know. But it was very that. It was very, very that. But that show is just so special. And I feel so honored, like, as an artist, literally, to be able to work on material where there's space being created. I've been at this a long time. And, you know, P-Valley is not my first time at the rodeo. But, you know, working in New York and off Broadway and Broadway, all of those things really kind of prepared me for this kind of a platform. And working with Katori and being in the universe of her creativity, I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Likewise.
We love that. Yes. We can't wait for season 2. But season 1 is on Stars right now. So people need to go watch that. And go watch Nico's legendary guest spot, too.
Yeah. Come on. Hopefully a lot more to come.
Yeah.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vitor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vitor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
stupid.
It doesn't
sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
On Sunday, the most reliably entertaining award show, the BET Awards, aired. Performances were given, baby announcements were made, and Black excellence was celebrated.
I don't know who wrote that copy, but I do agree. It's one of the most reliably thrilling award shows.
Yeah, that's the superlative we have to give it.
I wrote the copy. I didn't write the copy. I only read the full copy when I agree with it. So
okay, good. So now it's yours. You subsumed the copy. Okay, great.
Well, you know, they're writing. You know what it's like to write in Jimmy Kimmel's voice.
That's true. Yes.
Mm. Sometimes the copy feels very me. You know.
Okay. Right.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So
props
thank
to
you.
Brian who wrote the copy.
Thank you, Brian.
Back to baby announcements. I want to be mad at Miss Cardi because I'm like, we're never going to get a tour.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we're not.
But
she's never going to escape the clutches of that man, first of all.
But you know what? She seems to love being like a pregnant ass rapper. So shout out to her for doing what she wants with her body. She looked good in that outfit. I love the cutout. At first, I was like, what the fuck are you wearing, girl? And then I was like, oh, she's pregnant. And then I was like, okay, this looks good.
She's the Ali Wong of the rap world, which is a moniker she's never going to ever receive ever again. I'm just saying here.
I feel a type of way about her choosing to be a professional hype man for Migos.
Yeah.
You're like, as if Takeoff doesn't exist.
Yeah, and because, listen, and I love the song Type Shit. Like, and I actually like Culture 3. Like, I think Migos is very necessary for the culture. I think, you know, sometimes you just need some hood shit to turn on to enrich your day.
Yeah.
I love a new Migos album. But do I need to see them performing live? No. Mm. I do not. Not a single Migos has any stage presence whatsoever.
Who was the one that worked with Madonna a bunch of times? Quavo?
Yeah. Yeah.
That question.
Oh, she's been on my mind this weekend too, because she performed at the Boom Boom Room in New York, which was a quizzical situation. She did two songs. I'm sorry, this is not BET oriented.
No. And every gay who scammed access to the Boom Boom Room showed up in their ASOS and Shein outfits.
You leave them alone. My God, fast fashion is accessible to some people. It's all they have.
No, it's like most gay people right now dress like a kickball team on the moon. That's what they dress like. Shiny shirt tucked into what? Shorts. Yeah.
Big pants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, BET Awards. The theme was Year of the Black Woman, which, sure.
Okay.
I was talking about this with our friend Gus once. You could probably put together a supercut of every time someone on an award show says, what a great year for women. Yeah. Like every year someone says that. It's like, guys, what does that mean? Like women existed and you noticed them? It's such a weird, like, you think you're being novel, but this has been repeated 100,000 times. There's no meaning to that statement.
It's the year of the black woman, and most of the black women that Issa mentioned weren't at the show. So Z-Way was at home. So is Amber Ruffin. I will appreciate, though, that the ceremony really seemed like the first award show that was back to normal.
Yes.
Yeah.
People were just sitting down. There was even an audience of, like, that crowd that's usually around performances next to the stage. So.
And it was so refreshing because I remember BET Awards was, like, one of the first awards that we were like, oh, shucks, this time last year. Mm-hmm. We have to be inside for this. So it felt, you know, it feels like we're pulling out. It feels like we're pulling out.
But they turned it out last year. And I'm like, totally. Did they learn much from, did people learn much from last year?
A precedent was sent.
It's my whole thing with, you know, a lot of the digital performances that we were getting during COVID was I thought it was going to invite people to step it up a bit more, right? Meanwhile, my girl, I love her down. That performance of Thought Shit, I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Megan had the best performance of COVID last year. Like, at the beginning of COVID.
That concert was amazing.
And then this is what we get?
Yeah.
It's also kind of a minor bop to me.
You know? Like, this was just very, very Dua Lipa. I learned this choreography in 45 minutes, which is what Dua said when her recent video came out. And I was like, girl, we know.
We see it.
If we're talking about Dua Lipography, we got to talk about Lil Nas X. I mean, I say this affectionately to the man because, one, he is a supermodel, and two, takes every award show performance as a time for a stunt, you know, in a Britney kissing Madonna sort of way, which I appreciate. But man, he made Dua Lipa look like Alvin Ailey, girl.
Yeah, listen, I love the black excellence, the black gay excellence, and I want to support, and I love the kiss at the end, mostly because I like a stunt like that at the BET Awards. And I also like that more so than even the Britney and Madonna and Christina kiss. Remember, she was there.
Yes, right.
She was there, even though the cameras didn't show her kissing Madonna. That one has more of a statement to make than like just salaciousness for salaciousness sake, you know?
Definitely.
But my first question was...
Don't act like it wasn't a lesbian turning point, okay? It turned us all out. It helped. It helped.
Okay. Go listen to some Tattoo or whatever. I don't know. But I want to say that I do not get the theme, first of all. What does Michael Jackson's Remember the Time have to do with Call Me by Your Name?
The answer better be nothing.
At this point, Lil Nas X, as, along with stunts, he just thematically does stunts. He just, everything conceptually has to be worth us talking about or he's not going to do it. Mm-hmm.
The dress on the red carpet.
Girl.
Which also didn't look good.
Girl, talk your shit.
Remember the Time, I will say, the video obviously has like a gilded palatial theme. And so that sort of fits in with his performance, which also was giving me like, here I go. Lion King and also Legends of the Hidden Temple. 1994 was represented. Yes.
Big Olmec vibes. I'm excited for the album. And the other song that came out after Call Me By Your Name was sort of like a non-factor. That When the Sun Goes Down song.
I don't even know what it's called.
You know, like his sad prom song. Very Olivia Rodrigo vibes. Yeah, the performance for me just like didn't really stick.
Also, BET, multiple song performances. We got to stop. Just one. Just show up, do your thing, and leave. I don't need to see these people be on the stage for this long. It's too long.
Some people do stay on too long. I did not need DJ Khaled at the end.
Too long.
Bring it out, everybody. But I will just say lastly that I love Lil Nas X's team. Obviously, I profiled him for Entertainment Weekly. I think a lot of the people on his creative team are interesting and have some really good ideas. But I don't know, when you're still an artist in this sort of like big label machine, it's hard to know like what decisions like you want to make, whether you need like the right people, like having a real creative conversation with you about what you're doing. But I didn't get the Michael Jackson stuff. The choreo also was not there. I like the kiss at the end, but at the end of the day, that's like, that's the reason to rewatch it, right? But nothing else about the performance is anything that I put on YouTube to rewatch, you know?
That kiss, I might have to leave Keep It to be his personal security guard at this point, because he is fully kissing men at the BET Awards, and I know it's some homophobic uncles screaming at the screen. Like, it's just, it does.
Oh, absolutely.
I know he's doing a lot for the culture. He is. I have to give Lil Nas that. It's amazing, but I'm worried about him.
I absolutely love it, but, you know, I like, at the end of the day, you also need something around the stunts, because years after the stunts, we got to remember the content.
You're right. Oh, Tyler is back. We have to talk about Tyler's Lumberjack performance.
Tyler, the Creator, was maybe my favorite performance of the night.
I mean, he's already been brought to this station, this echelon, but I would really put him as like our modern Pharrell. Like, he gives us so much. He gives us so much.
He gave us an amazing Pharrell song on the album, Juggernaut.
I know. I think he and Pharrell produced most of this project, right? As you guys know, we're probably, it's everywhere. You can't escape it. But Call Me If You Get Lost is Tyler's most recent album drop. Amazing. So many great artists on it. I think conceptually it's not fully there the way like Igor is or Flower Boy, but I think that's the point. And that is why I enjoy it so much. It's kind of just a mishmash of the things he's been thinking about the past quarantine. Wonderful. Wonderful project.
Yeah. Loved him. Also enjoyed the City Girls.
Percolator.
Yeah. They lip synced the hell out of that performance, but it was a lot of fun.
It really did.
It was a lot of fun.
I love them.
What about the philosophical question of the night? Did Queen Latifah come out?
She's never said explicitly. She'd just be like, right. Yeah, I got a girl and a kid. Happy Pride. Bye. I really enjoyed that. She did mention Ebony. She did mention her child with Ebony.
It's that Jodie Foster Golden Globe speech thing where she is acknowledging her same-sex partner, but you would only know who that is if you've kept up with the speculation otherwise, which other people have done on her behalf. This conversation about did she come out or not, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be 2007 Out Magazine, but
I know, right?
It is just like, you could just say it. I don't know.
But I feel like also, at first I was like, well, so many young queer women could look to her and feel empowered, but we don't need that. We're not checking for Queen Latifah to be like, yes, I'm gay. And now I'm like, oh, I can comfortably be gay on the podcast.
I just have to say that for me, I need it, because right now I just feel like she's telling me to keep living single. And I don't know whether I can live with a partner. I think she's lying.
Oh my God. That's the thread you're taking us down? Okay. If you told me before, oh, we're getting like a medley tribute to Queen Latifah, I'm like, oh, have we seen that like at 7 different award shows secretly? But we haven't. I feel like the best songs in her catalog, you weirdly don't hear a lot anymore. So it was nice to revisit some of those. Because also, Queen Latifah is this interesting person where I feel like when she came on the scene, she was the most interesting. And ever since then, she's sort of as she's become more mainstream and gotten acting projects, sort of become this, like, I don't know about bland person, but less ferocious. And so I like reflecting on that era.
I recently visited her at 89 album, All Hail the Queen, which is sort of like house inspired. And that's like an album I was digging into. And I'm like, this would, I mean, I don't know. It seems like an album that more people who are into like house music and like late 80s, early 90s hip hop, like you'd hear it on more playlists. So revisit that album. It's very good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say that, like, I don't know, a lot of our hip hop stars from that era really were a part of driving, you know, like a counterculture to white mainstream culture. And then at a certain point became part of mainstream culture themselves.
Like LL Cool J or something.
Yeah, LL Cool J, even Ice Cube, you know?
Mm-hmm. The thing with Queen Latifah is that she was never giving us like, I'm this crazy wild character. I'm going to be like a Missy Elliott or I'm like Khalees. Like she was always just, hey, I'm gay. I got big shoulders and I be rapping. Unity. Like, and we love that. We love that for her. But then she went on to like, you know, being in Just Right and Last Holiday and these movies where I'm like, these are kind of just Black Lifetime films that I'm interested in because of the cast, but they weren't very good.
Don't come for Last Holiday.
I'm coming for it, girl.
Don't say Last Holiday wasn't very good.
What was the point of that? What was the point of that? Why do they pair Queen Latifah with a bald nigga every time? Huh? Why? What about her screams that?
Who wouldn't want to be paired with LL Cool J's lips?
I hate you. Baby, take the Kangol off.
I'm hot. Okay, I'm hot, and I need to be cooled down by James.
I need LL, and that stands for lick, lick. Yes!
She is an Oscar nominee, too. Would anybody in that park get nominated for an Oscar? I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Now you coming from Matron Mama Morton? Y'all some haters today.
It's on my mind.
More proof. I'm going to add this to my geometric proof of Queen Latifah being gay. That movie. Okay, we got Chicago. We got her performance in Hairspray where she plays Motormouth Maybelle where she's just a bachelorette the whole time. We should have known she was gay. Ugh, she's wearing a caftan. It's so gay.
Her partner was civil rights in Hairspray.
That's right.
She was married to justice.
I know where I've been and it's in some pussy. So...
Jeez. Help her. Help I eat up.
Yo, I'm off this. I'm zooted off this cold brew. Yo, every morning it's gonna be this. It's gonna be this.
Well, when we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. I don't know what's going on in my mind this week. Like I was saying, I was angry at several things. So y'all, while we were off the mic, Telfar security bag drops. I don't know. I can never get one.
I'm so sick of these emails. They have a new bag every week.
Constant emails. There's always a new color.
It's the same color too. They're like, here's the bag, slightly smaller. Do you want it? You can't have it.
And I know all the damn people I see with bags. I know they're just buying them off eBay.
Girl, I'm buying from these white resellers. I'm paying the price. I have no choice.
I'm like, listen, you already got your coins.
Well, Venmo told me I could buy the bag because they're going to give me the $500. I'm going to win. Me, Lewis.
See, I could also be like, keep it to everybody reposting Venmo's Instagram in a chance to win $100,000, but no one read the print, and it's not actually $100,000 you're winning. They're giving away $100,000. You could win $500.
Imagine losing your dignity.
The spirit of junk mail. Yes, you really brought me back to the Publisher's Clearinghouse days.
It's what's very funny too is like, look, I'm not going to drag. Look, if you need $500, you need $500. But I'm telling you, Venmo ain't giving you any damn money.
It's Member Cash App Friday.
Yes, they're using you for free promo.
Scored.
For one. Two, you've listed your Venmo handle down there. So, like, I don't know, someone might start asking you for money.
That's why y'all are blocked.
It reminded me of scams in general. I was just wondering to a friend yesterday, like, who are the people that still fall for, like, people who comment on your Instagram, like, DM me to collab, or like, I can help you get followers, or I make like $600 an hour doing this like day job. Like those emails still go out too. You still see ads for them. Who's clicking on these?
Well, it's like those voicemails you get that are from robots, actual robots, and they say things like, your file just came across my desk. Robots don't have desks. Shut up.
Who is falling for scams?
It's a 7-year-old in Illinois right now that is offended that you are calling out her character like this. Okay. It's mostly grandmas. They're trying their best.
That's fair. I think there have been many memes about how our parents were the generation that were always worried about us being corrupted on the internet.
Right.
And now they are the people who will like truly invite like a terrorist into their home by clicking on a link.
Oh, there was that movie about that. Nebraska, speaking of Aida here.
Mm-mm, I'm not from there. I don't know why you would think that I'm from there. I never talk about it. So
anyway, Aida, what's your keep it this week?
Girl, we going to be surprised. No, probably not, because I have a tendency to like bad things on this podcast. However.
Do you? Do you really?
Keep it to my taste levels this week, because... We all know I love a cult classic, a Boss Baby, a Leap Year, and Italian
You haven't named
Job.
A cult classic yet?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, wait, Italian Job, yes. We have not talked about the Italian Job. Ed Norton did what needed to be done. Mm. Okay.
Yes! Girl, I've considered theft ever since that movie, every day. Okay, I won't bore you guys with all that, but I went to, making my way downtown to the Regal. Where I watched The Fast and Furious 9. Mm. Yes, the best piece of cinema I have seen in years. I am replenished. I am rejuvenated. It was hilarious. I've never been so entertained in my life.
I'm so mad because I haven't seen it yet. And I am a Fast.
You are Fast.
Aficionado.
Yeah.
I'm an aficionado, okay?
Oh, that was, okay. I'm going to call that clever, actually.
Thank you.
I don't watch these movies, but I do think about Jordana Brewster and people with, you know, she's in the Jennifer Connelly club of like long straight hair and seems kind of mean, which is like my favorite kind of celebrity. Mm-hmm. So I want to be intrigued with her. I sometimes call her Gasoline Allie McGraw. That's my nickname for her based on what she does in these movies. You can appreciate that pun or not. Go ahead, Aida. What did you think of the movie?
She does give, you know, like Stark femme fatale in this whole movie, jumping over shit in a butt. Like, it's all there. It's all there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm super behind on the saga. I have only seen this movie. I have not seen any of the other ones.
Oh my God. You haven't seen the others?
I haven't seen a single other one. I know the first one is
There's nine others.
Girl, well.
Because there's the 8 before Fast 9, but then there's also Hobbs and Shaw, the spinoff.
What?
Yes, with Jason Statham and The Rock.
Speaking of Africa, so Charlize Theron is in this. And the budget for this movie, the budget for this movie could feed a whole country, okay? Yeah. It's ridiculous. Everything is just so much CGI. I think a million cars explode. I've never seen a film like this. I'm always going for the slow, deliberate, emotional. Fuck those films. Ex Machina, fuck you. I'm only watching Fast and Furious movies from here on forward. Are you kidding me? Oh, amazing. I was cackling the whole time. It's such a self-serious movie. It doesn't even know how funny it is. It's hilarious.
I'm seeing it this week.
So I want to be clear. The keep it is to movies that cost under $300 million.
Exactly. Get your shit together. Show out. Show out.
I'm seeing it this week because I really missed being able to go and see a movie that you're looking forward to in like the middle of the day.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's a nay.
Seeing a movie at like 11 a.m. used to be my jush.
Your what?
My jush.
Girl, is this gay stuff or is this?
That's gay stuff. Yeah.
Add it to the list. I've never heard this one.
That's like Jasmine Masters always says her jush.
But as in like Z H U Z H or whatever it's spelled like?
J U S H.
Oh, never mind.
It's like a rendition of my jam, my shit, my thing.
Yeah, my jush.
My prerogative.
Helen Mirren's in this, right?
In it, she is.
And she's like driving a Lambo, et cetera. Okay.
Yeah.
Her Oscar win is one I think about the most because that's the best actress here. Quickly, it's Penelope Cruz in Volver, Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, Kate Winslet in Little Children, and Judi Dench in Philomena. What a year. Anyway.
Helen Mirren's in it. She is, you know, whipping a vehicle with a stolen necklace on her way to a white party, an all-white party. And just calm. Just calm. Doing like Dale Earnhardt Jr. type tricks, just frown on her face, her beautiful, beautiful face. She looks amazing. She always does.
People don't actually know that when Nicki Minaj raced with China, Helen Mirren was also in the race.
Okay. Yeah. She came in like fourth or fifth. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was in the white Lamborghini just to race with China and to lose to China.
Mm. Okay. Barely placed. Mm.
Anyway, Lewis, what's your keep?
Yeah.
My keep it is to people clapping back at Courtney Love for getting a little rankled that Olivia Rodrigo in the album art for her new concert film Sour Prom uses this photo where she's holding a bouquet of flowers and crying, and Courtney Love put her album cover from Live Through This, the very famous whole album, next to it and said hashtag twinning, and then on Facebook added that it was rude how close the copy was. Guys, Olivia Rodrigo did copy it. I'm sorry. It reminds me exactly of that album cover. And people calling Courtney Love rude. What is she supposed to say? I'm so pleased you stole this from me. That would be very weird of Courtney Love, would it not? Who, by the way, is one of the most legendarily, I was about to say petty, I'll say funny in a mean way about other artists in history. Look up her comments about literally one of my favorite celebrities who exists, Alanis Morissette from the mid-90s. The girl could not... She could not get Alanis Morissette out of her mouth for a time. If you picked up a Spin magazine, you were reading about Courtney Love being mad at somebody. You just know if you ran into her at like Chateau Marmont or something and sat down with her at the right time, she will go through the Rolodex of artists she's ever met and why they pissed her off. I mean, that's just the nature of her. So I think people should just accept that the album cover is a little bit of a steal.
I accept it. But I will also say that... people are constantly inspired by other people, and I get calling it out, but I will also say that two things are true at once. Courtney was being rude as hell. Because
this girl is 18. Courtney Love is damn near 60. What?
I loved it. I loved the, you know, the like the twinning comment, and I loved, you know, when Olivia Rodrigo commented, oh my God, Courtney Love, I love you so much. I thought the first response was funny when she was like, thank you, my favorite florist is in Edinburgh or whatever. I'm like, okay, that's funny. And then she's like, I'm expecting a note. I'm not writing you no damn note.
Bitch, what?
Don't tell me to write you a note, Courtney Love.
Children don't know handwriting anymore. Stop asking for that.
Yeah.
Also, I would posit that maybe she was also copying Jawbreaker.
Oh.
All right. Fine. All right. A movie I don't need to see again. Didn't love it.
I just think the sad girl at prom mascara running on your face is not that original of an idea for Courtney Love to be like, I own the rights to this. And I don't think Olivia Rodrigo is the one who did her creative design for that project. So there's just so many things. I'm sure it went up. She had to go. Olivia had to Google Courtney Love. I'm sure. I'm very sure of it. She's 18. There's no way she understood what was going on.
I'm sure she's listened to some Courtney Love.
Maybe for reference tracks for her project.
Well, yes, absolutely. Maybe. You know she likes Celebrity Skin. Come on.
I was about to say, oh, it reminds me of Jennifer's Body, the movie, which is in fact named after a Courtney Love song. There's the credit.
I mean, it's a bit sort of like when FKA Twigs called out Lil Nas X team for, you know, like the copying her video, Call Me By Your Name, and then we got a cute little interaction between them. But yeah, I mean, listen, the young stars are just, they have teams who are doing things, you know? And
yeah,
that's how it happens.
It's a little too close for me. I'm a little rankled.
Yeah, you got to steal from dead people.
That's what it is.
Exactly.
Okay? Okay? Bob Fosse is not going to be like dragging Beyonce.
Right.
For doing Rich Man's Frug in the Get Me Vody video. Okay.
By the way, I still don't feel it is common knowledge that a lot of Michael Jackson's style and dance moves are perhaps lifted from Bob Fosse performing in the Little Prince movie. When you watch, literally the moonwalk is in it. It's so interesting. A lot of people, I don't think people know. Look up the Little Prince movie. You won't believe what you see.
I'm not looking up the Little Prince movie, Lewis.
Ira, what?
Stuck on your own planet, just like the Little Prince. Yeah.
Another keep it is to celebrity liquor brands.
I am sick of this desperately. Yes.
Hey, be careful. You know, Ciroc sponsors us, so you got to be careful what you say.
I would never drag Ciroc.
That's true.
Because I think that a peach Ciroc goes extremely well with Simply Peach. juice. Anyway.
Reveal Diddy with a gun to your head right now.
Diddy, I love Ciroc. Ciroc, I mean, there's some that are good. We talked about this a bit 2 weeks ago when we talked about Kendall Jenner and her 818 tequila, whatever. Mm. But everybody is trying to get into this liquor business, you know, to get some extra coin. But I think that what celebrities sort of don't know is that you want to associate them with it, or it has to be so good that we're not even thinking about a celebrity being behind it. Mm-hmm. I think that so many people don't know that George Clooney was one of the people behind Casamigos, right?
I thought everybody knew that, but
jaw dropped. No, my jaw's on the ground. I didn't know this.
Yeah, see?
Big shock.
A lot of people don't know that. So you either are drinking it because of the celebrity connection, or it has to be like so good and permeate the culture in an interesting way. It reminds me of when Turtle tried to start a celebrity liquor brand on Entourage.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, this is all to say that Michael B. Jordan recently started one, and he was dragged to hell, and he is changing the name of his liquor brand. The brand is called, in French, I would call it Uve, but the French patois pronunciation of Michael B. Jordan's rum brand is Juve, you know, which is a phrase borrowed from the start of Carnival in the Caribbean. And he was accused of cultural appropriation because he tried to trademark the name in the same way that, like, Kim Kardashian tried to trademark kimono.
And I don't believe she created the first one, if I'm mistaken.
So, either way, the phrase was not his to use, apparently. And in the trademarking of it, you know, when you try to trademark a word, you sort of have to claim that, like, it has no cultural significance, and that's why you can use it. And people weren't too happy with that, which really makes it feel like my keep it should be to celebrities trying to trademark things.
Mm. Yeah. Don't you have enough?
Because you remember when Kylie Jenner tried to trademark the name Kylie? And Kylie Minogue was like, absolutely not.
That's the beginning of my Joker story right there, hearing that. Defending the real Kylie's honor. And other Kylies. Remember the model Kylie Bax? There are other Kylies out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only reason this story came to my attention anyway is because Nicki Minaj posted about it.
Of course she did. Miss Harajuku Barbie herself? Miss Chopstick in the hair? That one?
Okay. That's Miss King Kong to you.
Chun-Li.
She posted an Instagram of someone dragging him for it. And she commented, I'm sure MBJ didn't intentionally do anything he thought Caribbean people would find offensive. But now that you are aware, change the name and continue to flourish and prosper. Which is a sweet way to put that. But I do want to point out that if anyone told Nicki Minaj to do anything like that, she would send the barbs after them to murder them in their sleep. And you know what? That is called, you know, being a three-dimensional character.
Yeah, it's her world.
This is the year of the black woman. We can be complex.
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
We could be complex.
I was not saying me as in like I can be one
black
of them.
Black woman, Louis. Oh, it's me. Yeah.
Are you that girl?
I actually
tell me you're that girl.
That girl.
Tell me you're that girl.
I do say Vertel with a fake French pronunciation. Maybe I should be lumped into this conversation. Who knows?
I do forget it's Vertel, isn't it?
Right.
Like turtle.
Yeah. Keep it down. Keep it down. Yes. Just like from Entourage.
Don't drag me for referencing Entourage.
I've been thinking about Entourage all week. I did think I saw Jeremy Piven at an Erewhon. It was not him, and I embarrassed myself.
Entourage, what it gave was male Sex in the City.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Mazar culture, please.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Without that, we wouldn't have Debbie Mazar on Younger. And without that, we wouldn't have Debbie Mazar's cautious comments on Madonna's Instagram. Her cautious support. Yeah.
I do constantly wish that I was at Erewhon more because I feel like Phineas is always there.
Oh, is he? Wait, of Phineas and Billie Eilish fame?
Yeah, like he's always like
no firm and firm fame.
Yes, yes. Bitch, I want to see that Phidias. Okay. I want to see Ed and Eddie at Erewhon.
So many
okay?
days of summer vacation figuring out how to spend it at Erewhon.
Remember when Erewhon was the hotbed for like anti-vax and like Stop the Steal conservatives and QAnon people?
Yes, yes.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Bothers me because it's nowhere backwards except two of the letters are switched, and I just wished it worked out. Actually, yeah.
You know what I've been wondering? Do you think Adam Levine stormed the Capitol? Anyway, we'll figure that out next week. thank you to Nico Anon for joining us. This was Keep It. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Caroline Rustin, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Our executive producer is Ira Madison III. I think I've heard of him. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nar Melkonian, and Milo Kim for production support every week. Stay safe. Be blessed. God loves you.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
stupid.
It doesn't
sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.